Welcome to Blood Red Guts with Tim Bradstreet and Tom Brisey. What do you mean it's not called that anymore? Oh, nobody tells me anything.
Hello and welcome to episode 4 of the Tim Bradstreet Experience podcast, still unnamed at this point, but we're still working on it, people. The contest is still going on, mostly because Tim is not in town. Gosh, where could he be? I think he might be in New Mexico in the high desert out with Thomas Jane, apparently shooting some sort of a film, and apparently not some sort of, like, you know, low-budget thing, a real film, an actual film with film and everything, with Thomas Jane called Dark Country, I believe. So welcome, Tim Bradstreet, from the high desert of New Mexico.
Yeah, we're kind of hosting from afar.
That's right.
I like it.
You are off on a cell phone. Well, actually, you're on your hotel phone, which is like, what, a one-star hotel in the middle of nowhere kind of thing, or?
I like to say I'm on a mission from Tom. I am actually, God, should I even broadcast this? I might
probably
be gone.
Not, yeah.
I might be gone by the time. I'm actually in a 5-star resort.
Ooh.
Go figure that out.
So yeah. you're somewhere in New Mexico. We don't want people stalking you, but you're actually out there with Thomas Jane shooting Dark Country. And you've been out there for a while, and people can read your production diary on the Raw site. It's been really interesting. I've been really interested to follow it. And I think it's a great insider look on how this stuff is done. I think a lot of people don't know the nuts and bolts of production, and you're doing a really good job of sort of letting people in on that.
Oh, cool, cool. I'm glad you're digging it. You know, it's like I just kind of wanted to start it as a, you know, just kind of a, what's the word I'm looking for? This is a continuing theme in the Blood Red Guts show. I get stumbled up on something and I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
It's going to become a drinking game soon. You know, when Tim can't remember his train of thought, take a shot at tequila.
Yes, and I'll try to stop breathing in the phone as well because I know that's going to get annoying. I'll try to breathe over here. Is that okay?
No, I think that's worse.
I'll try to cough over there, too.
Because I know you're fighting
off
a cold.
Cold.
Yeah, because it's nice and balmy there, apparently, when you're out at 3 in the morning in the high desert of New Mexico.
Oh, it's just, you know, it's summer weather here during the day. And I'll tell you what, the minute the sun goes down, the temperature starts falling like Eddie Izzard's pants at a Playboy party. I'm serious, man. It gets down to 38 degrees in a heartbeat, and the wind's just whipping up out there, and we're out in the middle of nowhere.
Mm.
And it's just cold, and well, we have some heaters and stuff like that, but you just pretty much freeze.
Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, I grew up in Phoenix, and you know, even in the summertime, you know, you can have a 50 degree swing in temperature, which is quite a bit. So it's nasty out there.
There's no acclimation. It's just really hot or really freaking cold.
So where are you in the process?
Kind of dust.
where are you in the process? I mean, how far along and how much left?
We just started the second week of location shooting, so we're still out in the high desert. Got another week next week, and then we have we're on stage, and we break for a couple days for Thanksgiving, but I'm going to stay here.
Cool.
And with a couple other people, we'll probably have, you know, a nice turkey sandwich at Denny's.
Just like the Pilgrims.
I
believe it was the Pilgrims who started the Moons Over Miami. So
that is correct. Well, I'm going to go straight for the the bird, Super Bird.
Oh, the Super Bird. Well, that is very, very Thanksgiving-y of you. Where's the studio shooting going to be done? Is it in L.A. or is it going to be out there?
No, we have a studio here.
Cool.
Oddly enough, we're filming a horror movie. I guess it's not really a horror movie. It would the way I guess we describe it, or I've described it on the forum, is that it's a Hitchcockian, kind of Hitchcock-inspired noir thriller.
Cool.
Very much being shot in the spirit of film noir.
Wow.
And a lot of people like say that, you know, like our film's film noir. It really never is. This one is. This is pretty film noir. And it's groundbreaking 3D technology on this movie too. We're doing stuff that's never been done, and that kind of leads me into the fact that we're going to have Ray Zone on tonight.
That's right. The Ray Zone, who is responsible for all sorts of 3D comics. If you've seen a 3D comic, more than likely Ray Zone has published or produced it on his website, over 130 comic books in 3D. So, you know, if you've seen one, he's the man. And it's kind of cool that he's involved in this. How did he get involved?
Well, he was, you know, Tom's known him for a while now, I think 3 years. They meet at the Southern California Stereo, what the heck's it called? The Southern California Stereoscopic Freak of Nature Fun Party. That's not really the name of it.
You know, my invitation to that got lost in the mail last year, so...
Yeah, they're special, and then they come stereoscopic. Which
is, that's right. Yeah, I only saw half of it. I couldn't figure out the other half. So, but I mean, yeah, I read on his he did a little guest blog on your production diary thing, and he was actually talking a little bit about that. And I think that's very cool that they've stayed in contact, and now he's involved in this. I actually, you know, surprisingly enough, I didn't even know this was going to be shot in 3D. This is very, very cool. It sounds like you guys you're doing some really groundbreaking stuff here.
Totally. I mean, we're using cameras that have never been used ever.
That's
on
great.
Anything. I mean, it's absolutely cutting edge.
Cool.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it really is unbelievable stuff. Hmm. Our cameraman, Howard Smith, has invented this rig, this AR rig, to hold this little tiny camera, and it's like it's built into a centrifuge, so it never leaves the horizon.
Wow.
I forget what Ray's got a way of saying it that's really kind of hits the nail on the head better than I can with my layman's terms, but it's nothing in 3D ever been shot like this. Hell, there's not been a lot of 2D movies that have been shot this dynamically.
It's very exciting. And actually, you know, the more I've been reading about Beowulf coming out, people are just like going crazy over the 3D aspect of Beowulf. So I think it's a whole new age of 3D. I know that people have said
Beowulf is a pretender.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just stepped all over you, pal.
Yeah, that's okay. I was just going to say, I mean, people have talked about 3D before as like, oh, it's the age of 3D, but really it looks like the technology has gotten to the point where it's really going to be an age of 3D, so I think that you guys are right there on the cutting edge. That's very cool.
Well, definitely so, but I would not call Beowulf cutting edge 3D, because what they did was they just animated it, and then they animated it side by side. Basically, I'm putting again, this is in layman's terms. Ray can probably tell you exactly. Actually, Ray is very excited about Beowulf, the fact that it's 3D, because this is playing in this playground.
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, it's I'm sure it's a different, especially since, you know, you guys are doing with live actors, live, you know, crane shots and all this really kind of cool stuff. So it's obviously a different concept, but it is, you know, if it does really well, then it's just going to do nothing but help your film along. So I think that's very cool.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, unfortunately, yeah, I mean, as far as the 3D aspect goes, I think yes, you're right, but the fact that it's an animated movie, this is a live-action movie.
I'm specifically talking about the 3D aspect of it, because I think people kind of still associate it with sort of a gimmicky thing, but I think it's changing. I think people are really embracing it because, you know, I think 3D computer animation has sort of set the table for us that where now it's not a gimmick anymore. It's like, oh, I really want to see that, so... If the technology is there, which obviously it is now, this is very, very exciting. I can't wait to see. I'd love to see some of the footage from it, but I can't wait to see this film.
Man, it's stunning. Well, on our RED camera, which is two HD heads side by side, we have a viewer on there where you can see both the images tagged, you know, like a 3D image.
Mm-hmm.
So our digital imaging tech, Max Penner, when he's sighting through there to kind of see how it's going to work, wears these polarized lenses, and so he can see the 3D on the fly.
Cool.
It's pretty amazing.
Wow. And I understand, I was reading, you guys are doing behind-the-scenes stuff in 3D as well, which has never been done before. I think that's kind of funny. I love that.
Yeah, that's going to be a scream. Yeah. That guy shows up Thursday.
Cool.
And you know, what's great is Sony and their PR department have been really great because, you know, for behind-the-scenes and stuff like that, they're the ones responsible for, you know, hey, they can either listen to us and get our ideas from us on how to promote this thing and do things like 3D behind the scenes, or they could just say, well, you know, it's not really worth it. We don't want to go that route. They've been very supportive. Cool. They know what this is all about.
That's great.
It's great.
Yeah, it's great to have them on board like that. I was going to say...
It'll be fun because... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good.
I was going to say, it's going to be fun because, you know, the three... Man, here's something we're going to get into with Ray. Ray worked with Jane for a long time on how to come up with like a little key. We had David Alcock, who did the storyboards for Mutant Chronicles. Tom hired him to work on this, and they came up with the storyboards together. And then he got together with Ray, and they came up with a color depth graph for every shot, for every frame.
So it can help the cinematographer.
And broke everything down into red, and like stuff that would be in the foreground, you know, extreme foreground would be red. And then as it goes back into the frame, orange, into yellow, and then at screen plane, green, and then going back successively in deep space behind the screen, the colors go green, blue, purple. So it's got like seven like depths of frame in it. It's absolutely crazy.
Cool.
It's, I mean, it's more than that, but I mean, those are our key points.
Right. So he's not here. He's in New York with the opening of The Mist, Mr. Thomas Jane. Now is the time to dish on him. How's he doing as a director?
Tom's doing great. I mean, it's man. I mean, he's starring too.
That's got to be hard.
It's a load.
Yeah.
But here's the thing: no one knows this material better than Tom does.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like when you're filming something, especially on a low budget. You know, I think you mentioned earlier that you know something about this isn't a low budget. It actually is a low budget thing. This is a $4 million movie. Which you know, I know that's. There's been a lot of movies that have been filmed cheaper, but in the scheme of things, and especially an ambitious vision with 3D, $4 million is low budget.
Very impressive, yes.
We're working with small crews.
Yeah.
And it's...
I know that you get paid $3 million. You get paid $3 million of that, so, I mean, that's pretty impressive.
So. I'm getting paid $2.5
million
for my input.
Wow, good. So you actually gave back $500,000. You're a good man, I tell you.
Yeah, well, I started out with three. But the more we kind of figured out, you know, after day one, we'd already lost half a day.
Mm-hmm.
So I voluntarily gave up $500,000.
Well, I know if this is true, then Thanksgiving dinner at Denny's is on you this year. I can tell you that.
No, you know, the truth of the matter is that Tom's acting and directing and he ain't making nothing.
Yeah.
I know how much he's making. I'm not going to say it here, but it's he's making nothing.
He's obviously labor of loving this one, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, I think that's the thing you give up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, to get the movie made, he took nothing, you know, just to do it. And that's the sacrifice.
Well, this is probably a question for him. It's a question for him,
sorry,
but did he have to, did the studio give him money? Did they say, you have to star in this, or did he always want to star in this film, too?
No. The plan was always for him to star.
Okay.
You know, he's in fact the this was actually Dark Country was going to be his second movie.
Mm-hmm.
We were the plan from the get go is that we would do this film Amateur Kind before Dark Country, and Tom sold this producer on Amateur Kind. Guy loves it. You know, they really want to do this movie. But the more Tom got to think about it, he thought, you know what? As a first time director. It might be a little easier to wrap my mind around this smaller thing. So
yeah, you want
Dark
to kind of
Country
build up
then,
to those things, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And to get to Amateur Kind, Tom needed to do this smaller film, and they were very supportive of that because they loved Dark Country too.
Well, it's great that it's a smaller film, but it's still your cutting edge technology 3D stuff. That's great. I mean, you know, to be able to do that on this kind of a budget and is really exciting. I think it's how's it turning out? I mean, are you happy with the dailies? Are things coming out nice?
Well, we haven't seen much dailies yet. We're going to have something prepared this Thursday on our day off. We're going to get the whole crew in because. You know, when you work on a film like this, you know, your core group of people, which would be the director of photography, our A cameraman, Howard Smith, Ray, myself, Tom, and producer Patrick Aiello, we're all on the same page. We know what this film is. But, you know, when you hire a crew, even if they've read the screenplay, they may not get it. You know what I mean? These guys are just working for a living.
Yeah.
So we want to get everybody into a theater, and we want to show them the dailies and show them the kind of magic we're trying to make.
Yeah. I'm sure that always helps.
That's the plan for this week.
Yeah, I mean, when you get to that point when you can actually see something going, I'm sure that will really jazz people up and see what's going on. How is Lauren German working out? She working good?
She's great.
Excellent.
She's a trooper. And I'll tell you why she's a trooper, because she's wearing basically a slip. And, you know, everyone's saying, you know, God, we feel so bad for Lauren because we're all standing here in these giant coats and layers and boots and scarves and gloves and all this kind of stuff. And she comes out and she's going to act in this slip.
Oh,
well,
man.
The truth of the matter is she's in a freaking van nice and toasty warm most of the time, and she gets out for 15 minutes at a time. But for that 15 minutes, she freezes probably twice as bad as we all do.
It's got to be pretty chilly, yeah.
And she's practically naked, yeah. You know, in 30-degree weather for extended scenes, she's having to carry. I don't want to get too much into it, but she's got to do a lot of physical stuff.
I was going to say, practically naked in a slip in 3D. Yeah, baby, we know what market we're going for.
Yeah, exactly.
Well done. Cool.
And Lauren's pretty easy on the eyes, let me tell you. And she's cool. I said this in the forum. I said she's aces in my book because she laughs at all my jokes.
That's all we need, really. Kiss up to the production designer. You're set. Don't worry about it.
She's fantastic, though. She comes out. She's focused. She's given a great performance. I mean, we haven't done a lot of the acting stuff yet. And the first night we really did some meat and potatoes on that last Wednesday,
mm-hmm.
and it really pumped up the crew.
Cool.
Because the first four nights were brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, we were just out. We filmed in this arroyo, and we were just choking dust, and cars were getting stalled because they were getting choked with dust, and it was just a real long night.
And I understand you pretty much started off this movie as like a catering guy, and now you're like second unit director or something like that, right? I mean,
I started out as a towel boy.
Yeah.
And then they hired me to be the producer. No. I started out as, the idea from the beginning was that I would production design this movie.
Right.
But having never done production design before, and this being a Sony production, and for the most part, if not all, well, it's for the most part, a union film.
Right.
I do not have enough hours, or in fact, at the beginning of this thing, I had no hours, and so I can't wear the official title of production designer.
Right.
So they've come up with some crappy title for me, which is like graphic consultant.
Graphics guru.
I never liked the word consultant because it implies that I just popped in here for two or three days and went, hey, do this, do this, and do that, and everything will work great, and then I fly the heck back out.
Right.
So initially, I was going to come in and work with the set dresser and the set decorator and some other departments and establish the look for this film. And once I got in here, the producers saw that I was going to be able to bring a lot more to bear, and they agreed very quickly that they need me they'd like to have me for the whole thing. So that was great.
Cool. It's a nice.
Tom's off in New York tonight watching The Mist, so they did a ghost unit today. And they went around with, I think they did a little insert car stuff, and we lost some time the last couple of days with some various technical problems. So they were picking up shots tonight while Tom's gone. He'll be back tomorrow.
He's off being a star.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got to go play star, and Tom, The Mist is a big deal.
Yeah,
it's a really big deal.
I'm starting to really see a lot of push for it. I mean, there's a lot of ads on TV suddenly, and I've read some good stuff on the various.
Seen anything yet,
several have started to come out, and the ads are good. They're cut really well, and it looks really creepy, and it's good, and it's getting some good buzz out there on the geek site. So I'm pretty excited about it. Very cool.
We're pretty juiced, too, because, I've gotten a lot of inside scoop on The Mist, being a friend of Darabont's as well as Jane's.
Right.
So I've been hearing a lot of great crosstalk and a lot of information on how the movie's testing, screenings and stuff like this. And it's this weird thing going on where it's 70% of the people absolutely drop-dead love it.
Mm-hmm.
They think it's fantastic. 30% of the people hate it. There's like no middle ground.
Yeah, I think that's good.
So,
though.
You put 70 up against 30, I'll take it every time.
Exactly.
The studio's really behind it.
That's good.
And I mean, they think this is going to be pretty huge. And Tom's testing off the charts.
Great.
People are really loving Tom Jane in the movie. So
excellent. Well,
I remember Tom told me that Quentin Tarantino and Edgar, help me out here. I can't think of his last name for some stupid reason. The guy who did with Simon Pegg.
Oh, Edgar Wright.
Edgar Wright.
Yeah.
Quentin and Edgar Wright went in and screened the film with Frank one night, and they just absolutely loved it. And
cool.
Tarantino said it's the best thing Jane's ever done. He's amazing.
Cool. And excellent.
Right after they left, Frank called Tom to tell him, and said Tom was all giddy.
Yeah, giddy like a schoolgirl.
Pardon me, too. I have a bit of a cold, so I sound kind of raspy and
beat, well,
which I am.
I'm fighting one off here after the San Diego fires, which affected you a little bit. Your lovely wife was ready to evacuate at any time. I don't know if people realize that, but it was definitely an effect out here in San Diego. Luckily, everything's fine on all accounts, but we've definitely been through some interesting times on this shoot so far. I can tell you that much.
It's been a crazy month, hasn't
it?
Yeah,
it's been nuts for you. It must have been. I felt really bad for you because I mean, it must be really, really hard to be that far away and hear this kind of stuff and then not know what's going on. And yeah, it's kind of weird stuff. So.
Well, I kept kept tabs on Missy and the baby and everything. So I mean, that was great. And my best friend Jimmy's living with us right now. So I know they're in good hands. So.
Yeah. Jimmy.
If anything happened, I knew they'd get out, and that's I know right. that they've been. Were they going to move in with you guys?
Well, they were actually. They weren't going to be able to because the 15 was shut down between us and them. So they would have had to have gone north at some point. But then everything sort of.
Oh, well, it's been
of,
easy. I just got the helicopter parked on the roof there.
Oh,
they just jumped in the old
right,
Cobra
yeah.
260. That's what I really need.
I forgot that you had the Bradstreet jet. Ready to go at any moment, but no, they
yeah,
were.
It's got the vertical liftoff system. It's a fantastic piece of technology.
We actually offered them to come down this way, but they couldn't at that point. But they rode it out, and everything went pretty well. So I told them just to get into the pool. Just hang out in the pool with the dogs. It'll be fine. So.
Yeah. Well, I was told my pool was black.
Yeah.
covered in inch of stuff. I'm not in any real hurry to get home.
Yeah. Really. I have to go to the Arroyo. Bye. So anyway, I think it's time.
But enough of that crazy stuff. We have a show to run here.
We need to bring in Mr. Ray Zone. We're going to try to call him right now so we can talk to him about the wonderful 3D process that's going on. Very cool. Back to Thomas Jane. We do hope to get Thomas Jane on at some point. But of course, he's got his hands full. He's opening a movie in New York. He's filming in New Mexico. I don't know what he's doing. Jeez, come on, man.
We're going to have Tom. Don't worry about it.
We definitely want to get Tom.
We actually planned on having Tom first.
Yeah, yeah. That hasn't quite worked out that way. But I understand that we can also maybe talk to the DP, and hopefully we can talk to Lauren German. So hopefully we'll get some more on-site dark country sort of stuff for you. But right now we're going to give a call to Ray Zone right after we get back from this short break, and we're going to talk some 3D. Tim Bradstreet, are we on with you? Can you hear him, Ray?
Yes, I can hear Tim.
Hi, Ray.
Hi.
Excellent.
What's up, boss?
It's been a long time since I've seen you, pal.
Oh, yeah.
It was our days back at the motel.
Well, Tom, I'm working with Tim and Thomas Jane and a bunch of really creative geniuses like Jeff Boyle and Howard Smith, DP and camera operator on a amazing new 3D film called The Dark Country.
That's what I've heard.
And it's a real pleasure to be doing this because this is following on the heels of my converting Tim's amazing art for Bad Planet number 3 mm-hmm. to 3D.
Yes, I know. I saw that one not long ago. Tim gave me a copy, and it was the 3D stuff was great. So it's a pretty amazing process. I've looked at your website. You've done over 130 comic books in 3D.
That's correct.
So you've been doing this for a while. How did you get started in that?
I just have always loved 3D since I saw it when I was 6 years old with Three Dimension Comics in 1953.
Hmm.
It did take me about yeah, I know. But it did take me about 30 years to start doing it professionally.
Hmm.
And that was in 1982 when I actually wrote a book, a 3D comic book, which was a history of 3D called Battle for a Three-Dimensional World, which to my great joy was illustrated by Jack Kirby, King of the Comics.
That's great.
Ray and does not mess around, people.
Well, I was just blessed. It was at that point I began to realize that 3D was my calling.
Hmm. When did you get into the film aspect of 3D?
I've always been into it. I have always experimented with, and I've done a number of projects with the stereoscopic moving pictures, but this is my first feature film with Dark Country.
Cool. Tim did point out that you were involved in the Great Metal Storm, the destruction of Jared Sin in 1983.
I was blessed by Alan Adler, who wrote the movie, to be the official mascot of the film, and so I hung around the set and took 3D pictures.
Cool.
And I had several friends who worked on the movie, like Tony Alderson, a great stereographer who I did a number of the 3D comics that I published and also did for other publishers, and John Rub Calvis, who is going to be shooting behind-the-scenes 3D footage of The Dark Country.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. I saw that on the production blog you did for the Raw site, and that's got to be, I mean, that's definitely got to be a first, right, out there in the DVD world of behind-the-scenes 3D?
Absolutely. This is the first 3D behind-the-scenes footage, which will be great for promotion. There are a number of interesting uses that can be made on the Internet for interactive viral promotion. But also on the DVD to have stereoscopic footage along with the film in 3D.
Right. Is what kind of a camera are they using for the behind the scenes? I mean, what kind of a rig is that?
Well, John just purchased a dual HD rig that's very compact. It has two HDV cameras on a single bar.
Hmm.
And it's perfect for handheld shooting. It will give excellent quality, more than sufficient resolution for a DVD.
Has the HD world really improved the 3D world? I mean, has the technology just gone leaps and bounds in the last few years? Because it would seem to me that that would be the case.
Yes, it's absolutely true. That's what's happening with the production photography on Dark Country. It's 2K HD, and the digital acquisition means that the cameras and the camera heads being used are so small that the 3D photography has greater mobility than it's ever had for any 3D movie.
Excellent. You're working with Jeff Boyle, the cinematographer. Has he had any 3D experience, and how is he adapting to all of this cool stuff?
He is loving it. he read my book, 3D Filmmakers, and he had a 3D Bible. He got one of the 3D Bibles that Thomas and I prepared for 2 weeks prior to the pre-production.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were just talking about that with your color graph.
That was such a great idea.
Well, it was really Tom's idea, and then I worked out the scheme with him, and then we spent 2 weeks just coloring by hand these amazing storyboards by David Alcock.
Wow.
And it breaks down the depth in the composition in each frame according to a color scheme, with red coming off the screen, going through the array of colors to purple, which is deep behind it.
And I'm sure that was sort of a Bible that Jeff Boyle's been using. Did he really appreciate that? Did that make his job a lot easier?
Yes, he said it was very useful when he sat down to look at each of the shots and planning them in terms of how much 3D was going to be in them.
Excellent. Have you, Tim, noticed anything? I mean, just the shots coming in? I mean, are you guys adapting to the 3D, getting new ideas when stuff is happening out there?
Well, there's certainly, you know, we're the Bible is the Bible, so we're trying to stick as close to that as we can. But there's always room to, and I've noticed this too. I mean, it's Ray, I think you'll concur, that opening scene at the diner changed. It's essentially the same shot, but we came up with just a better way to do it. It's way more dynamic, the way that Howard came up with how to shoot that and go up the ramp.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sure. That was really a bravura traveling camera shot with extremely mobile photography, where it starts with an opening shot of Tom coming out of the diner at the gas station, walking out to the car, and as he does that, he goes around behind the car, gets in the car, and as he's doing that, Howard, who has this amazing rig called the AR with the two HD camera heads in it, it's a very sophisticated form of Steadicam, although that's a trade name. This is a new form of making a mobile steady camera where the two 3D heads maintain the horizon no matter which way you tilt the rig.
Wow.
So Howard is walking out. He's filming as Tom goes out behind the car, out to the car. Now Howard has the rig which has tethers going off of it. Behind Howard, there's another man who is wrangling the tethers, which are going to another man who's holding a 3-foot square board that has two laptops on it. Behind that man holding that board, the tethers go to another man who is holding two hard drives. So as Howard is filming and moving rather quickly, as Tom moves out to the car for this amazing master shot, these three other guys are behind Howard, following him with the tethers, really working to stay up to speed with him, not trip and fall. And so Howard moves around the car with these three guys following behind with the tethers, and comes around to the front of the car, which then pulls around and off. Howard and the three guys walk to the side and pause for an instant, getting a great silhouetted shot of the stranger who is in the foreground, putting his cap on, his hat on, as the car is at the stop sign. Then Howard and the three guys move up this ramp as the car drives off in the distance, so they have an aerial view. And it's just an amazing shot in 2D.
Wow.
It's a kind of shot that has never been done in a 3D movie before, to have that kind of mobility with the camera.
I mean, that's got to be the main difference between the way it used to be shot and the way it can be shot now in the future, is just the mobility of it.
Absolutely. And that is the main innovation with Dark Country, the mobility of the 3D cameras. And then, of course, the entire idea that the 3D is to be used not as a gimmick, but as a means of heightening the story, of telling the story in 3D.
I have a technical question. I'm just wondering, is the lighting on something like this, I mean, you're shooting at night in the desert in New Mexico, and, you know, you're going for, obviously, it's sort of a film noir thing, but what kind of demands are there on the lighting on 3D? Is there anything different, or is it lit pretty much the way it always is?
It's pretty much lit the way Jeff Boyle sees it, and Jeff is he's kind of like a master of digital lighting and the look, which is it's kind of this golden film noir look. It's predominantly black and white, but it's shot through with this kind of sepia gold tone. It's this amazing look, a taste of which you'll be able to see in The Mutant Chronicles, which is the film that Tom just made with Jeff in Britain, and I think it's coming out something like spring 2008.
Yeah,
and also, yeah, the lighting does, you know, it's like Tom and I, I mean, Jeff definitely is lighting this film, but the way that it looks is very much spawned off of what Tom and I came up with on how we wanted this film to look, that film noir style, you know, lots of black, lots of rim light, you know, top light, all this kind of thing.
I guess
80%, 85% of the movie takes place inside a car. So we have, you know, there's the lighting is very important, because, and also the camera angles, and once we get on stage and we have our cut-up cars, you know, there's definitely the challenges to, you know, keep people interested while we're in this car, which won't be hard, actually, when you know the story. But the lighting is very important. But just to kind of give you an idea, Tom, of what we're doing with this, is we're shooting also a lot of day for night. And what Jeff is doing, and I've done a ton of tests and done some tests with Jeff, is that we're taking those day shots and we're grading them and basically knocking them way down, and then in some cases colorizing them to make it look like night.
I guess part of my technical question was, are there any limitations with the 3D cameras that you have to worry about with lighting, or are they pretty much just cameras that you can do anything you would with any normal setup?
As far as I see it, yeah.
Well, because they're HD heads doing digital capture, they have amazing sensitivity in low light situations. So it's in some respects, it's a real advantage in creating that film noir look that Tim and Tom designed.
So
it's real light and shadow, and it's very effective.
I think that's great.
But also, Tom,
go ahead.
One of the other things we're doing is that, you know, at night, you know, certainly these cameras, if we pointed them at the stars, they would pick that stuff up.
Right.
But what we're doing is a lot of plating. So when we're driving down the highway, we may cut off at horizon, okay? And then are back. We're going to have just stars crystal clean in the background, mm-hmm. and these shapes kind of in black relief. It's almost like the absence of something there, where the stars are missing, that show you what else is going on out there.
Excellent.
And in addition to that, we also have instances of heat lightning, which are part of the story, which is a special kind of lightning that is true to nature,
mm-hmm.
That will light up the sky at times too.
Excellent.
But yeah, if you go on, actually right now, my blog, my main blog at timbradstreet.typepad.com, you can see kind of what I've done is a movie poster, kind of a mock movie poster for the film. It's not the official, but it very much shows what a shot of this movie would look like.
Cool.
Excellent. Car traveling down the highway, foreground, you've got these kind of mountains in the background, and then this ultra clarity sky with the lightning kind of coming through it.
Very, very cool.
And that's pretty much hitting it on the head.
So for Ray, the question then, I guess, how has it really changed? I mean, this is sort of a landmark film, I guess, on the 3D world. How has it changed from the early days of 3D to now? What has the technology allowed you to do?
To create the movie in the contemporary style, which is to have camera mobility. That's mm-hmm. that's the primary hallmark. And then, because it's digital too, to invest it with a classic film noir look of light and shadow, using the rim light, as Tim said, and to light for depth. One of the great masters of film noir in the 40s and 50s was a cinematographer named John Alton, who shot classic film noir like T-Men and The Big Combo. And to prepare for making this movie, the team watched his movies.
Mm.
Jeff and Tom Jane has always been a big fan of that. John
Tom made it a prerequisite.
Yeah,
that's great.
That's right. It's like homework to prepare for making The Dark Country.
That's great.
And Alton wrote a book called Painting with Light, and he has a chapter on lighting for three dimensions, how you create layered lighting effects that are actually building a three-dimensional look into the 2D film. And so that is being used now in an actual 3D film. So that is it's a stylistic hallmark of film noir, but it's actually making the 3D even more dramatic.
Does the process, the 3D filming process, have any effect on the editing process? I mean, when you end up with, on the laptops, you end up with a single file, or are you ending up with two different files of film? How does
it affect?
There's
two different files. There's a left eye file and a right eye file, each one of which carry common time code.
Are they composited into one and then used for editing, or does this change the editing process at all?
Well, they will remain discrete left eye and right eye versions of the movie right up to projection in the 3D theater.
Hmm.
But yes, the editing process is affected, because one of the things you want to do is to make it easy to watch the film in 3D, make it easy on the eyes. So you need to pay particular attention to matching across a cut where the attention is paid in visual space on the Z-axis.
Hmm.
So if you cut from a shot that has something off the screen to a shot that has something deep behind the screen, the eyes have to do a lot of work in an instant. So you pay attention to what happens with the 3D across the cuts.
Hmm.
That is one way that editing is changed, is affected by making a film in 3D.
Yeah, that's actually, because I've done some editing, and that's a whole new dimension, literally. I mean, I hate to be joking about it, but it is. I mean, that's a whole new way to think about one shot to the next. That's going to be an interesting challenge.
Yes, and that is something, when Tom and I prepared the 3D Bible, that's something we paid attention to over a series of successive shots.
So, Tim and I talked a little bit before. I mean, you must be fairly excited about the upcoming Beowulf, because it's certainly getting a lot of notice in the 3D world.
Yes, I'm very excited about it, and I always want 3D to do well. I'm always rooting for 3D and wanting it to be as good as it can and to perform well at the box office, and I expect that's going to happen with the Beowulf in 3D.
I've been...
It is... A performance capture CG film,
right?
Unlike Dark Country, which is live action, even though there are going to be CG elements and composites with plates and such.
Mm-hmm.
Beowulf is in the CG domain.
Ray, is it? We were talking about this before. Is it true 3D in the sense that when they basically, you know, use, you know, the way you work in a 3D movie is you have your, you know, your models and your rigging and you have these all on, pardon me, all on you have it all inside the camera basically. It's all is there a distinctive left eye right eye view, or did they just take the same footage, duplicate it, and then do the 3D thing to it?
No, for real 3D, you need distinct left eye, right eye points of view. So the images are not identical, even though they may appear so with a cursory glance. They are unique to each eye. And CG has had real advantages over live action 3D photography because you have such control over the stereoscopic parameters. That's where The Dark Country is really advancing. One of the things you can do with the CG 3D movie is to have the distance between the left and right eye image. It's called the interactual or the interocular, the distance between the two lenses or eyes, so to speak. You can have that change dynamically while a shot is going on. That's easy to do in CG. But very difficult with live action photography.
Right.
But that's a technique that is actually being used in shooting The Dark Country in live action. The cameras are actually moving closer together or farther apart while they're rolling, and
that's
that creates
so dynamic.
That's amazing.
It's a very fluid and dynamic look to the 3D, but it also is a storytelling tool that can have great, sometimes subliminal emotional impact.
Given the fact that, well, you know, having gone through the whole thing with Tom, you kind of already know where you want those spots to hit, right? I mean, you've already, in a sense, we've already planned for this.
And that was what was happening with that bravura master shot at the gas station, where Howard with the three guys were moving with the camera around Tom in the car and then up the ramp. During that whole sequence, the distance between the two cameras was changing. It was narrowing down when the camera got close to the subject, and as the camera pulled back from the subject or the car drove down the highway in the distance, the cameras moved further apart.
So that's all automatic inside the cameras?
Well,
or
there was an operator. Our 3D technician, Max Penner, was operating a rig which controlled those, playing it rather like a musical instrument while the take was being shot.
I guess this
pretty
is
cool
a,
stuff.
Yeah, this is a gratuitously technical question, but how does focus pull work on that? I mean, how do you know, you have to keep both cameras in focus? Is that what he's doing at the same time?
Well, we are really in a hyperfocal situation with these HD heads, meaning that it's a very short focal length lens, and everything in the field of view is sharp. When you're in a hyperfocal situation, the entire depth of field is sharp.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah, the only thing you can't do is there's a certain depth where the camera can't get too close to the subject or things do lose focus. Am I correct on that, Ray? I think it's like 2.5 feet, somewhere in there?
That's right. It's 2.8 feet. And then we have several different rigs, and they each have different distances, but you have to be aware of that when you're getting real close. You don't want to get too close because you lose sharpness, but anything from 2.8 feet back into infinity will be sharp with a hyper focus.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, the more I'm hearing about this, the more this really does feel like a landmark. I mean, do you see, they've often mentioned 3D as like, oh, the next wave. I think they said that originally in 1952. But, I mean, this is beginning to sound like it really could be with high-definition television, and there's no reason a rig like this couldn't be used on Law & Order. You know, I mean,
tell them about the TV, Ray.
Well, one of the TVs that we have in the production office is a 3D ready Samsung television. It's 56-inch diameter, so it's a big screen.
Cool.
And this sells for $1,600 at Best Buy or Circuit City, places like that. So 3D is coming to the home very quickly into big screen TVs.
Wow. I mean, that's. I mean, you could legitimately say in the next 5 to 10 years that a lot of stuff could be shot this way. It could be kind of become a standard, couldn't it?
I would say 5 years is closer.
Wow. There will be an aftermarket for 3D. In 3D in the home, like the DVD that will be made from The Dark Country, can be formatted that way. You could have one side of the DVD or a two-disc set where you could have the film available in 2D, but then you can have it in the 3D version for the people who have the new Samsung or Mitsubishi 3D-ready televisions.
And so on those 3D-ready TVs, I mean, you're talking about you don't need the glasses, you just watch the TV.
No, it's not. That's auto stereoscopic. That also is going to come in, I believe, in a rather surprising way within 5 years. But
wow. You
use glasses that you plug into. They're actually, you don't even have to plug these glasses in. They are wireless. They have an infrared sensor in the glasses, and on the TV is an infrared emitter, which sends the signal to the glasses, and they alternate the left and right eye images very quickly at a high refresh rate, 120 hertz, so that you don't notice flicker. You're seeing the left and right eye images alternately at a high speed, so that they are virtually perceived as simultaneous.
Wow. So right now that sound you hear is the guys at PlayStation and Nintendo Wii going crazy, because, boy, that would be fun.
That's really in the works.
Yeah. Well, that's very exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting for 3D movie making, because that 3D in the aftermarket is also another engine driving production of 3D movies.
Do you know of any talk of this particular camera rig being used on like a television show like House or Law & Order? I mean, is there any thing like that in the works?
Well, something happened actually a week ago with the Regis and Kelly Halloween show broadcast in 3D.
Oh, like I need to see Regis Philbin in 3D.
I concur.
Well, Ray, back about, what was it, last Halloween, Medium had that episode in 3D?
That's correct.
That's right.
Do you know how that was shot?
Yes. Actually, our 3D technician... our technicians, Max Penner and Tim Thomas, who are working on Dark Country, put together a rig to shoot that. And they also worked with another company called Sensio, who's very much working in developing 3D TV.
Did they shoot that with a dinosaur?
They shot it. They may have used the Paracam, as a matter of fact. That's what we call the dinosaur. It's a 4K. It's a big rig that shoots 4K.
Hmm.
3D with two 4K sensors.
Wow.
But it was broadcast in anaglyph, the red-blue process, both in HD, high-definition anaglyph, and then on regular broadcasts, NTSC red-blue as well. So the anaglyph glasses for Medium were distributed through TV Guide, and I understand they ran out. They made something like 8 million, 10 million pairs, and put them in the magazine, and it sold through, and they had to do another run.
Wow.
They really should have gone to you for those, Ray.
Yes, I agree. I've been making 3D glasses for quite some time. And for the Regis and Kelly show last week on the Halloween day, the 5.5 million glasses were given away free at Walgreens photo departments.
Wow. So what's the plan for Dark Country in terms of the DVD? Will it be released with 3D glasses, or?
We're talking about that right now with promotion stuff. Ray and I threw out several ideas during a conversation with our film publicist, David Link. But we don't want to get too much into that, right?
Yeah, we...
hush.
We've also had discussion with the value-added people for the DVD to prepare for that. We're having a wonderful stereographer named John Rupkalvis come out and shoot the behind the scenes, so that when those promotional considerations come up and the DVD opportunity, we will have stereoscopic behind the scenes footage.
So when this also, when you're editing or when you're creating this film in terms of being able to show it on 2D, on your normal sort of thing, what is there, is it a difficult process, or do you just choose one of the cameras to use, or how does that work?
It's very simple. We're shooting a left eye version of the movie and a right eye version for the 3D. For the 2D version, we just use one of them, either the left or right eye.
Yeah, like,
we're making
like
the 2D film simultaneously.
Excellent.
And I have to say that the 2D film looks fantastic.
Cool.
Oh, yeah. Just like that, there have been a number of shots that are just simply stunning in 2D. And I think everybody's going to sit up and take notice when they see them in 3D.
Yeah, it's like we're standing behind the monitors, and you know, after some takes, you know, not just me and Ray, but other people too that have the vantage, you know, just look at each other and go, "That's so cool." And I mean, in a sense, we're getting excited about seeing it in 2D. And then when you think about it, sometimes you just forget about the fact that this is in 3D.
Right.
You know,
right.
Even on set.
Which is a good sign, because again, you don't want it to be a gimmick; you want it to be an enhancement.
Right.
So.
That's
the whole idea. It's been very important to Tom Jane throughout the whole pre-production process that the 3D not be used as a gimmick.
I think that's a very, very wise approach. Is there a second unit device as well, or do you using the same device to get second unit shots?
We can use the same devices. We have a number of devices with slightly different parameters, so those can be used for second unit photography.
Great. I was just wondering, is there anybody else interested? Are other studios or filmmakers looking at this, like, to see how it works, or are they...
Every day, more people in Hollywood are sitting up and taking notice. I think it was about 2 months ago I received unofficial word, you might say, that 25 different productions are in various stages of pre-production or in the works, and increasingly more and more of Hollywood is paying attention to this.
Wow.
Yeah, and what you also have to realize is our director of photography, Jeff Boyle, runs this thing called the Cinematographer's Mailing List, which mm-hmm. is also with a giant forum online. And with thousands, I think right now, I think they have over 4,000 members, cinematographers from around the world that are, you know, watching what Jeff's doing on this, listening to what Jeff's talking about, because basically we're alpha testing a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, that's great.
And,
I mean, this is...
So Jeff's updating those things every day. And, you know, so, and the great thing is it's a wonderful community. So if we have problems with stuff, there's guys who may have experienced certain things before, or in the case of, I guess more in the cases that we're experiencing those things. And Jeff is, you know, right on top of it. And he really is on the cutting edge of what he's doing. And it's pretty amazing.
Every day I'm amazed by, Jeff's expertise in imaging, not just digital, but also film. He truly is a monster, and
yeah,
to see
he's
in his intelligence, and to see him work into light, and to see the knowledge he brings to lighting these scenes and shooting them in 3D. He's fully aware of 3D and cognizant of that, but it has seamlessly become a part of the filmmaking process.
So the other thing about Jeff is that when he's light, doesn't Jeff make it seem incredibly simple?
Oh yeah,
I mean he knows how not to over communicate stuff or over light or overdo anything. He simply just automatically, just from experience, from having been there, knows. You know, he just consults his little oddball whatever light meter kind of thing that is, and you know, he's just got a great eye for it too, but it's weird, you know, he's lighting these things fairly simply because he knows that he doesn't have to do too much.
Absolutely. Wonderful to see him work on the fly. For example, 2 days ago we were at a motel that had a series of cement blocks that had holes in them, and he simply put a light shining through those holes. It was just right a part of the architecture. And shining the light through those holes onto the walls made an amazing effect that in filmmaking is called cuchulorus, when you hang a kind of irregular pattern in front of a light and it makes variegated shadows.
Hmm.
So he used just the architecture of the building to create these amazing shadows on the wall.
It's funny because when we originally went over and scouted that location, Jeff and I both kind of got giddy as a schoolgirl, and Tom was looking at us like, guys, this is just kind of a rundown motel. It's kind of cool, but I don't see what the big deal is. And Jeff and I both looked at each other, and we said, do you see those cement blocks over there with these designs in them? And so Jeff knew that day. He already knew what lighting he wanted and where. And so when we got in there, that's how easy that was. We already had a second unit set up, almost an A unit set up with the AR rig on the Lenny arm out in front of the building to shoot the motel sign. And then as soon as you get done with that, he's already got the red set up for another master shot, and then turn around and get this other. He already had it mapped out in his head. It was just amazing. And what that ended up looking like, Ray, and you'll back me up on this, it's almost like a shot out of Blade Runner. You know, it was like that Bradbury Hotel stuff.
Oh, yeah, which has that grill work, filigree grill work, which creates complex shadows.
Mm-hmm.
It's really wonderful stuff.
Tom, you know, Tim Bradstreet has developed facial sunburn and maybe even some on his forearms from the big lights that are being used on set.
I like to stand in front of the 20Ks.
But he's a bit of a pasty guy, so he needs all the sun he can get. So.
I'm rather fast skinned.
Yes.
But, Ray, just a quick question here too. What I was talking to a friend of mine today, Jimmy Phillips, who is a photographer in photogrammetry, and he was reading over the blog, and it was funny because he kept running into words he was very familiar with. Because of what he does in his job, it has some partial links to 3D.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever run into any of that?
I'm always trying to stay abreast of and study technical elements, so that I can continually enlarge my understanding of what 3D is by knowing about light itself or photography or the psychology of perception.
Right.
So, photogrammetry is an amazing thing, and stereoscopic tools have been a part of it for probably around a century.
That's pretty cool.
I believe that was an Alan Parsons Project album, Stereotomy, was actually. are there other uses for this? I mean, this sounds like a really revolutionary rig. Are there other uses for it in terms of, like, medicine or car design or anything? I mean, not in the entertainment world. Have you gotten any feedback from people like that?
Oh, sure. Anything that you can think of, any field, stereoscopic imagery is being used. One use in France that they're making now is they're building instead of having to actually create a physical airplane, they build a virtual airplane, and they create the airplane as a stereoscopic environment that people walk through wearing 3D glasses.
That's crazy.
And they see it in a one-to-one scale, just like the airplane is actually there.
That's very cool.
And so, in effect, they may create this virtual version of it, and they walk through it, saving considerable money, not having to make a physical mock-up.
That's right.
Let me ask you this, Ray. Could people then, given this technology, could you pretty much walk around on the Titanic at some point?
Yes. You can create virtual environments.
That's
and
amazing.
Walk around them just like you're really there.
Well, if Kate Winslet's there and she's naked, I'm there.
So, Ray, I predict by the time you're 65, you're a millionaire, pal.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well,
I'm
that's
the amazing,
nice to hear.
I'm not the amazing Criswell because most of his predictions didn't come true. But like the amazing Criswell, my hand is to my temple, and I predict I will get 5%.
So mote it be.
No, you know, I just have to say that working with Ray on the Bad Planet 3D and getting, you know, it's Tom. It was so funny because before Ray and I ever met, it's like Tom talks about Ray all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the Southern California? What's it called?
The Stereo Club of Southern California.
Yeah, and you guys meet in a church basement?
Yeah, and it's a 3D camera club that's been around for over 50 years.
Cool.
And that's how you guys met, right?
Yeah, that's. I met him at a meeting of the club, and then he told me that just upon first introduction, he told me how much my 3D comics work had meant to him, and said he wanted to work with me. And he reminded me, he didn't need to remind me, but he reminded me that he said that when we started to work on the 3D Bible. And
right.
when he reminded me of it, he said, "Remember what I said when I first met you?" And I said, "I'll never forget it."
Well, this is great, Ray. This has been really, really interesting. While I've got you here, is there anything, what's coming up for you after this? I mean, what, any kind of comic books, what kind of movies, anything you want to talk about?
We also want to plug your website.
Yeah, I'm going to plug his website. It's ray3dzone.com. That's www.ray3dzone.com. You must check it out and see a whole list of the things he's worked on.
Well, I appreciate that. And my new book is just out from University of Kentucky Press. It's called Stereoscopic Cinema and the Origins of 3D Film, 1838 to 1952.
Excellent.
So it's a century-long history of 3D prior to the 50s.
And is that available on Amazon.com kind of thing?
Yes, it is.
Excellent. So check that out, because this man obviously knows what he's talking about. If you've seen a 3D comic book, you know who this man is. So, Ray, this has been great. Thank you for stopping by and taking time out of your busy day for this.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Thank you so much.
Hey, we'll see you back on set Thursday, pal.
Okay, you betcha.
Thanks, pal.
Okay, bye-bye.
Cheers.
That was great.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, isn't that wonderful?
That was really cool.
Ray is, he's our, I'm trying to think of the perfect word. He's our, you know what?
Spiritual
he's our
leader.
Angel. He just floats around the set.
He's a spiritual leader of 3D.
He's their spiritual leader, you know, he really is. And
the man's been there since, well, not since the beginning, not in the 50s, but still, I mean, if it's been done since the 80s, he's done it. So that's very, very cool.
Yeah, and he just, you know, he'll come up and he loves to engage people in conversation and convert them to 3D.
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, I luckily hit record because he just went right into it.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
I'm being interviewed. Here's my interview. Like, whoa, okay, great. You know, this is great. I mean, he's really interesting and obviously passionate about it. And I'm, you know, I didn't know that much about what you guys were doing there. And I'm actually really, really excited by it now. So this is truly landmarking stuff. I mean, you know, this is the kind of thing that could really lead somewhere. So
it really is. And, you know, Ray's been carrying the 3D torch mm-hmm. for 30 years. You know, I mean, he's been the guy that's kept it alive.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely, you know, it's also really, really smart of Thomas Jane to make sure that it's like anything else in film. It shouldn't stand out. It should work with everything else. So I think the greatest testament will this, will people, hopefully the reviews will be, wow, it looked great, but the story was fantastic. You know, I mean, that's really what you want to end up hearing.
Well, I think it says a lot about Tom, too, that, you know, I mean, he got together with Ray for a couple of weeks and worked up this color graph, and you know, he you know, got all his 3D stuff in order.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's done his homework. I mean,
yes.
not just with that, but pardon me, he involved Ray in this film.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you very easily could have just cut it there and let that be done, but to have Ray here, to have him a part of our production as a what are we calling him? A 3D
guru,
technical 3D producer, something like that.
Uh-huh.
Really, he's our 3D advisor.
Yeah,
and to just have him on the set is fantastic because you know, he's looking for things that other guys aren't.
Yes,
even Max, even our 3D imaging tech.
He's going to see things that no one else does. Yeah, that's great.
Right. I mean, I fully believe he sees the world in 3D. I mean, we all do, but I think
more
he
than
sees
we do.
It. Yeah, you know what I mean.
He sees it in 5D.
Yeah, he is the 4D man.
Well, I was going to say, we've been going for a while here. This has been really interesting, and I'm, you know, we need to do more of this. I would love to talk to the cinematographer about the stuff, because, I mean, obviously it's a whole new world for him, and it sounds like, you know, he's going to be a kid in a candy store. So I'm very excited to talk to Jeff about that stuff.
Well, you'll love Jeff because it'll sound like you're talking to Stephen Fry.
Yeah, that's even better.
It's really
I love
cool.
It.
I think they're from the same part of England, so they both have that deep baritone.
And when Thomas Jane is done being a star, we can have him on and get some insight from him as to how he's going about this whole thing.
Now, and that's the guy that's going to go nuts when you talk to him.
Yeah, I can't wait.
He's so passionate about this stuff. You know,
well, this has been really Tim fun. Bradstreet in the high desert of New Mexico, staying warm as best he can. And I'm Tom Racine in sunny, beautiful San Diego, where it is just, I don't know, 72 degrees like it always is. So,
but
we'll hopefully be back. I mean, obviously, we can't be on any kind of a schedule because it's film, people. Things are nuts. But this
I
hopefully...
up there. You said schedule, right?
Schedule. Okay. Yeah. I know, you guys are nuts, man. Schedule. I'm sorry. If we're going to talk to Jeff, it's got to be a schedule. Yes. But hopefully very soon we'll have Thomas Jane or Jeff Boyle or other people or at least Tim back to talk more about what's going on in Dark Country. So stay tuned. Talked about Metal Storm. I love that film. And you did this to me with Sword and Sorcerer. I wanted, can you name five or six people on Metal Storm in the film?
Oh, you know, Metal Storm, what was that, 83?
83, yeah.
Metal Storm's tough, you know, because here's the thing, Tom. Okay, babe?
Yeah.
Here's where I am at with Metal Storm. I saw Space Hunter Adventure in the Forbidden Zone.
Yeah.
That's the one I saw. I never saw the Destruction of Jared Sin. I abstained.
Well, it's actually it's got Richard Mall, who was in every
I might be able to get a couple, but that's a tough one. I think Tim Thomerson, one of my favorite comedian actors, is in it.
I love Tim Thomerson.
And I think it's one of Kelly Preston's first.
Kelly Preston, very good.
But outside of those guys, I can't even remember who played like the good guy. I have no idea who played the good guy.
That would be a gentleman by the name of Jeffrey Byron.
Are you cheating?
Yeah, of course I am.
How dare you?
Well, you're the genius here. I'm like, you know, I remember the name because I think it's hilarious. But man, I couldn't even begin to tell you. I didn't know Kelly Preston was in it.
I remember one time we were playing this. This is a game that I play. I don't know if you know this, but. You know, the whole name game, the fame game, however you want to call it, name these people from this movie kind of thing, where I always say I can name like six or seven people from it. And I remember one time we were playing this, and you remember the all-star kind of disaster films of the 70s?
Yeah, yeah. Airports and...
Yeah, they just have hundreds of people.
Towering
Inferno.
Those
are always the fun ones because, like, you know, even if it had, like, you know, you can name like five actors in it, I could always say, I can name 12 people. I can name 12 people from the Towering Inferno.
You're a nutcase.
I think I can. No, I could name 10 people, I bet, from the Towering Inferno. You want to get me? You want to try me?
I'm going to try, yeah. I was going to say, but you know what you need to do with your contacts out there through Thomas Jane and stuff, we need to talk to like Tim Thomerson and Richard Mall. I think that'd be hilarious.
I would kill that.
Wouldn't it be just great to talk like, yeah, just to talk like about all those great movies from the 80s and stuff. So.
Well, you know, he did those movies like Trancers.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember renting those on Beta. But, you know, they were like, you know, they were what they were. They were B movies. Heck, they were Z movies.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think the first Trancers, I kind of liked it. But it always was what it is, you know. But I just love Tim Thomerson. And, you know, there's this movie called The Harvest that he's you know, shows up in little bit roles. And he's just Tim Thomerson. And he's effing great.
He's still working. He was in Days of Our Lives for 5 years recently. He's in a movie.
He was on
a
soap?
Yeah.
I might have watched it.
He was in Live Evil in 2007, Wicked Lake in 2008. So he's still out there doing these great, crappy films. I love it. All right. Towering Inferno.
You going to test me? Okay.
Towering Inferno. Let's go.
I'm going to say Steve McQueen because he fought for top billing, I think.
There you go.
Did he get top billing in that?
He's listed first in the cast, yeah.
Okay, so he probably got top billing on the movie posters. It was a big bone of contention because he was very competitive with Paul Newman. very competitive. This is a well-known fact.
Okay. So you got Paul Newman. Got it.
One of my favorite actors ever, William Holden.
Number three.
And if I could just say a line from Bridge on the River Kwai real quick.
Go ahead.
Kill him!
One of my favorite William Holden lines.
One of my favorite lines from that is, "What have I done?" Just one minute.
Well, what's that from?
That's the
end. Well, what have I done?
Yes. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Well, wasn't that, that's Alec Guinness, right?
Yes, Obi-Wan Kenobi falls down. He goes, "What have I done?" And he falls.
What have I done?
Yeah. All right, that's
he
three.
He falls on the plunger.
Yeah.
But he, you know, at the end of the movie, he, oh, I'm sorry, we're getting off track. OJ.
Yes, OJ.
OJ is in there.
That's four.
The guy from The Man from U.N.C.L.E., Robert Vaughn.
Yep, five.
Susan Blakely.
Six.
And the reason I know that, I probably would have forget about Susan Blakely, but she was in a play my wife stage managed.
There you go.
With that idiot Jerry Burns from Dear John.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, she, there was the guy who was actually, they were standing on stage. He walks out, and this is what a jerk he is. He goes, he sits down on this couch that's on stage and says, "I can't act on this couch." And Missy just wanted to slap him.
Actually, sir, you can't act anywhere. That's the problem.
That's right. Oh, Faye Dunaway.
Faye Dunaway, number seven.
How about Jason Bourne himself, Richard Chamberlain?
Richard Chamberlain, eight.
Fred Astaire.
Fred Astaire, nine.
God, Fred Astaire. I miss him.
I miss Fred. Some great films.
Oh, one of my favorites. I love this guy. Heart to Heart. Robert Wagner.
Robert Wagner, ten.
I heard somebody do a Robert Wagner impression one time, and it was about the funniest thing I've ever heard, because of all the people you could do an impression of, I've never heard someone do Robert Wagner.
I was going to say, that's kind of specific. I like that.
And I can't remember who it is now, but I want to say it was Kevin Pollak.
Well, you know, he does a great Alan Arkin. I saw him live, and he did this great whole story about Alan Arkin. He does this amazing Alan Arkin thing, and then the lights come up after the show, and Alan Arkin was in the audience, and I thought that was hilarious.
He did Alan Arkin. That's genius.
And it was. It was just like, wow, man, what a great skill that can do Alan Arkin. Well, you did 10. I'm very impressed.
Well, I've got more.
You got two more. How many more can you do?
I've got more, because I think Dabney Coleman's in that.
Dabney Coleman, 11, yep.
I rock.
Mike Lookinland from the Brady Bunch was in.
Oh, film. Is he in that?
Yeah.
That's right. He's all right, right, right. Yeah. That's right. That's Bobby Brady, right?
Yeah, Bobby Brady.
Yeah.
And Gregory Sierra is in this.
Oh, Greg Sierra. He's awesome.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of Sanford's Son, he showed up on there for a little while. and then he's in one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
Papillon.
Ah, Papillon.
When he finally escapes into the jungle, I think Greg Sierra is the guy that gets caught real fast.
Yeah.
In the jungle. Yeah. Hispanic actor. Wonderful guy. But yeah. So what'd I do? 11?
You did 11. I'm impressed.
All right. I'm good.
You're crazy.
It's too self-aggrandizing. I mean, I'm good. I feel good. That's what I mean. I don't mean I'm good.
No, you're good. Yeah. I'm sorry. If this was like a game show, you would have just, you know, won Final Jeopardy. That's very impressive. You don't have any real skills. I mean, you're a great artist and all, but apparently this is your real skill. So, you know, other people can cure cancer, and you can name 11 people from the Towering Inferno. I'm impressed.
Well.